The following episode may contain spoilers for the game Frosthaven. Welcome to episode 8 of our board game podcast, A Master's Degree in Rolling Terribly, where we are talking mostly about our current campaign of Frosthaven, and eventually, I promise, we will cover more amazing board games. I'm your host, Deddy, and joining me is a man who deserves a more formal introduction to this week's episode because I did such a terrible job last week. Gaz! Say hi, Gaz.
Hi, guys. Well, I guess that makes up for it. So I appreciate the extra attention and hopefully I can make up for make it a good cast tonight.
Yeah, well, most people were actually saying it was actually quite amusing and they probably think I should forget about you more often. Just in the intro thing, and you sort of just slip in at some stage and I can, you know, be surprised.
All right, well, let's try that next week. You can just go solo and I'll just jump in when I feel like it.
No, I've actually thought about going solo just once or twice, like, how would I do it? And it's going to be awkward. I'll get through maybe 4 minutes of it before I tap out.
Yeah, because you'll be asking questions and it won't be anyone to answer them.
No, not even me. And I zone out of my own conversation. This week, we are back to actually playing Frosthaven. We actually got to play on Monday, which was Labor Day in Melbourne, in Australia, which was a public holiday, so a lot of people didn't have to go to work, and it was wonderful. We all got to catch up during the daytime instead of nighttime, and we said, look, we'll stay for X amount of time, and we'll see how we go. We can either hit one or two scenarios, or we can do one many times if we do a terrible job. So, yeah, we ended up doing, let's just say, the first scenario of the session. We decided to go on from now. Just going to test my memory. Was it scenario 7 after we completed Crabland?
Maybe.
Okay, it was the one that split off, and it was kind of like you can either go back and you can build an apparatus that's going to help you sail the high seas or something, right?
Yeah, we could take one route by building a boat.
Which we don't have.
Or another route, and we could build a raft. We didn't actually have to build it. It was more like a storyline raft.
Ah, I find one.
I think we were hunter-gatherers. We were going to build it, but it didn't want us to go back to Frosthaven to do that. It was like, you're sure you can put one together from what you've got here.
Mm. Yes. So we ended up choosing to do scenario 13. That's the one that continued on from that particular quest line. And name-wise, it was called the Frozen Fjord. And no one's corrected me yet. I just kept saying it and everyone was giving me grief. And not telling me exactly how to say it. That's a fjord, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, and we wanted to go kill more crabs. We were all pumped for some crabs.
Yeah, we were very excited for that. Couldn't wait to pound some crabs.
If anyone remembers a few weeks ago when we were talking about our journey thus far, and we did storyline, just had an urge to go punch some crabs, and then we kind of had that urge rising up again.
Mm. Want to go side quest, a whole other expansion of crabs.
But we didn't find any crabs.
Whoa, spoilers. So we finished off a road event, and this road event was, felt like a bit of a coin flip again, which is fine, but it does require having a certain item and making a decision about it.
That's the one with the Algox, yeah?
Whoa. I mean, yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, spoilers, Algox are in Frosthaven, so I feel like anyone who's played 8 seconds of it and read the opening statement knows that they're in it, but...
Okay, yes, it was the one with the... He was needing a slight hand.
It wasn't a coin flip. Like, I feel like they're all decisions, right? But we kind of talked our way through that a little bit in regards to what we wanted to do, so...
Well, we didn't really have... Oh, no, we did, didn't we? You did.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. And you were greedy and didn't want to help out.
Hang on a second.
Well, that's pretty much what happened. Uh-huh. And we decided last week, you know, that whole decision-making that Isaac's thrown in with a lot of the events and can lead to a bit of, you know, you working together as a team. So if three people want to do something and one person doesn't, you kind of want to go with the team consensus. And this time it didn't even happen, despite the fact that three people wanted to do it. You didn't want to, and you got your way.
That is a lie. We all agreed not to do it, so don't start throwing me under the bus.
Okay.
Anyway, so yeah. I mean, that, yeah, again, like, I found that was another interesting one. There's been a few that have come up now that have requested an item or some equipment or things like that, and I think it does add a little bit more to the road events rather than, again, it just be pick an outcome for this situation. Do you get a reward or do you start with a negative? I feel like, you know, we did, again, being very vague, but we did the last one and we provided an item into that, and then that changed into something which was cool. So I feel like there must be a few more of these coming up, which are opportunities to do that. So,
no, I guess it does involve potentially losing something, right? And that's the kind of risk. It's not just choosing A or B. It's give up A to then perhaps get B.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And if you don't, it's C. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I think there are, I mean, because it's tricky because we're still pretty early on and getting items is tough, right? Like getting any equipment for your characters, I think we need to craft them. We need hide for pretty much everything, and that doesn't exist in the Frosthaven world. We haven't been back to Frosthaven to pay our hide factory for our one hide in a while. So it's just tricky because we're not flush with items.
Yeah.
I feel like if we were midway through with our character building with these characters and we got this particular road event, we might have a little bit more to be able to interact with. So I'm curious if there's lots of these or are we just pulling them right at the start?
Well, what made this one also very different, not going to reveal the choices we made and all that kind of stuff, but what it did do was put a new event into the winter deck.
Oh, that's right. It did. Our outcome that we,
which was cool. It was the first time we've done this. And then we reshuffled the winter deck. Now, we're not in winter at the moment, but it just means that our decision will have repercussions. In the future, we don't know what they are yet, which is really cool. It's something that's going to be, when that card comes out, who the hell knows when it's going to come out? It's going to be a real, oh, it's that, you know? So that's pretty cool. That's pretty exciting. And that's something that the city deck and road event deck in original Gloomhaven didn't really have. Like, they tried to build some of that, but you only had the one deck of each. Whereas this, we've got the alternating seasons, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I think the ones that would come back around that you'd shuffle in Gloomhaven, the awkward situation was you could get them really soon. So, yeah, you're right. This is a build-up, and winter might, you could be close to winter when you get this one, but we're not. We're not even halfway through the first section of time. So we're still a fair way away, and you're right, we've hopefully going to build up some more of these events so that when we get to winter, it's really just going to kick us in the ass.
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely. So I started to set up scenario 13, and we had Fortella reading out the events to us, and we kind of got to a cold area of the game, but pretty dumb. A very icy area with a bunch of bridges and like pathways across to from one side to another or across a river or something. And we hear a lot of freaky voices. And the voice acting in Fortella was superb in this, to the point where we didn't understand what they were saying, because ultimately we were facing a new entity, a new creature of some kind, and that launched us straight into the scenario. Things wanted us, oh, that's right, turn back, right? Just turn back, or we'll kill you.
Yeah, it was one of those hollow warnings. It was like, turn back now or face our wrath. And we're like, okay. And then Fortella's like, you didn't have time to turn back.
Yeah.
It's like, well, hang on, wait, this sounds pretty ominous. Like, maybe we don't want to go this way. Should we heed the warning of the supernatural being telling us that we shouldn't be here?
Yeah, there was no option.
No time for heeding warnings. So let's just barrel straight in.
Exactly. And that's just going to anger whatever it is. So we set it up. I set up the first kind of thing. Now, this is what I found really, really interesting, is that number one, when we were setting it up, I was setting up multiple tiles, which is a little unusual. And there were two separate kind of tiles with two separate starting areas, which already, because as I'm setting it up, I'm looking at the app and I'm like, oh, this is really cool. I think I'm already seeing what's going on here. And I was getting very excited, started setting it up, and started setting up a new creature, which kind of looks like a flock of birds in the shape of a person. which turned out to be Shriek. I don't have a ruling on how that's supposed to be pronounced. Fiends, a new kind of creature. No crabs yet. So, you know, that was an interesting point. So the voices were coming from these Shrike fiends, which are essentially a mass, well, kind of like a murder of crows, like a thing of a flock of birds in the shape of a person because there's so many of them. And they're all, like, crowing into scary voices.
Yeah, but no crabs.
No crabs yet. So we had two of these kind of bridge corridors set up with starting locations. And this is a small caveat for anyone who's using the Frosthaven Scenario Viewer app to set up their scenarios, which is all we've been using lately, is this was the first time we ran into an issue. We didn't know it until a little bit into it, is that it makes you set up one of the rooms that isn't actually revealed at the start, but in the app, it was revealed at the start. And it led to a lot of confusion because we set up the three rooms. Two of them have starting locations of where we actually start, and a third room is off to the side. And then we learned what the scenario goal was, which was kill everything. Okay, everything needs to die. Just a standard everything needs to die. But the twist was there were special rules. And the special rules were that if you, when these creatures activate, right, it doesn't matter where, whenever a monster activates, if it finds a focus but it can't actually land an ability or an attack on them, they'll attack the scenario. And the scenario actually has a set amount of health based on level of everyone and level of the actual scenario. So we have health from the scenario tracked on the side, actually in our app. And we then realize, well, if we are not engaged with these things where they can hit us, they're going to hit the scenario. And if the scenario ever runs out of health, we lose. So we had a third location set up with creatures on it. And we're sitting there going, well, how are we going to get to those? That means they're going to hit the scenario every single round. And then when I went into the scenario book for the setup, that room wasn't set up. So it wasn't, yeah, it was missing.
One of the things that other also clued us in was because we're using an app to track monsters and our characters' initiatives and stuff. And so when we set that up, there was a second monster type that just didn't get put into it.
Yeah.
So I think that's what clued us in to start looking in and then, yeah, having a look at the book. So it kind of cleared that up.
Like, I doubt anyone's going to listen to this and be like, oh, we'll know that for later, because you're not going to really listen to this if you haven't done that particular scenario unless you've skipped it to altogether. But it is just, it was an unfortunate thing that I'm hoping doesn't reoccur. It looks like a simple error where whoever put the app together, they just forgot to cover that room. So we set it up only then to realize we weren't using it, but we knew it existed. And that was a little bit weird because we knew it was going to be eventually somewhere we'd have to, yeah, we'd have to go.
Yeah.
So in this particular setup, we had two teams and we had to decide very quickly who was going to be on that because we actually had to split it evenly.
Yeah, I think we ended up going with Team Awesome and Team Sleepy Face.
Oh, super Team Sleepy Face.
Yeah, so yeah, I think
we were Team Awesome. The Bone Shaper. No, you're right. We had Team Awesome. So we had the Bone Shaper and the Drifter on one side, starting together. That was Team Awesome. And what was Team Sleepy Face?
The ones that cleared the room in basically two rounds, and then were calling out to ask if we should open more doors. Yeah, that I think that was the other team, which was the Shadow Walker, Death Walker, Death Eater, and the Geminate.
Yes, so Gaz and Phil were on one side and Calvin and I was on the other. Now, this was a very interesting scenario due to these rules because it takes away your prep in a way. And
yeah,
a lot of us like to prep.
we've talked about this on the cast before. The three turns it takes Steady to set up his character for, he's ready to go in. So, but we've actually found the more and more we start these missions that everyone seems to have those turns now. So we start saying, "Oh, are you going to do something? Because I'm going to prep. Well, I was going to prep too." And by the end of it, so it's. I want to have a quick talk on this because it actually popped up and this same conversation can apply to the next scenario, which we'll talk about in more detail. But it's happened a few times where the setup for the scenario or parts of the scenario have put a little bit of a clock on what you're doing without actually saying you have X turns to do Y. And that seems really urgent when you're going to lose the scenario if you don't do a certain thing in three turns. But with these ones, because these monsters were just going to start wailing on the scenario, and we had a little bit of a chat about it at the start, because you know the base damage from the monsters, and we're like, oh, we can spend a turn prep. And I'm like, well, if we do that and they just do a zero attack, they're going to hit the scenario for half its life, and that's the first turn done.
Mm.
So we kind of agreed that we were going to try to move up a little bit. But it's, yeah, I thought it was a really cool way of going, no, you can prep if you want, but you're going to suffer the consequences.
Yeah.
And it
definitely changed up the playstyle and the beginning of it. Because that no longer was it like, cool, give me a second, I'll put my top persistent card, my bottom persistent card. Phil wasn't going to put his top, you know, shadow generating ability. Calvin was not going to sit back and be able to summon like crazy. We needed to get in range, and that was going to be the theme of the whole scenario, is that we need to be engaged with them and taking these hits so that the scenario doesn't. And it just changed the whole dynamic. It was a very, it was refreshing. It was a new kind of puzzle. It was frustrating at the same time, but it just means that you can't feel that security of, well, I'll just do what I've always been doing, rinse, repeat, right? It really spiced things up.
Yeah, yeah. And what it did through the scenario is it meant that if we ever got to rooms where we had monsters far away, we couldn't just chill and let them come to us. So normally you have the opportunity of just going like, we'll just wait it out, right? Like we'll pull them into where we are so that we can fight them. You really had to just barrel in and try to get in range so that they were going to hit us. And I think it was in the third or fourth turn, once we actually opened our door, only one of the rooms we opened into this big corridor, and we were really far away from it, but there were these ghosts, or what were they, ice wraiths? No, not ice wraiths.
Wind demons.
Wind demons, that's right, who have a decent move on them, but we were a long corridor away. So they spent their first turn just walking up and punching the scenario. And that made it really kind of clear. I was like, well, hang on, we've got to get out there. Like, we can't just doorway fight these and wait for them to come to us, because they're going to move again and they're going to do the same thing. So, yeah, it definitely created a little bit of tension in that we always needed to make sure we were the focus.
Mm. So if you've done this scenario before, you'll know that there's like the top bridge, and then parallel to it underneath you've got the bottom bridge. So Gaz and Phil were on the bottom bridge, and actually, I'm only realizing right now, it probably depends on the direction, yeah, right?
Because I was sitting opposite to you, and I'm like, wait, no, we were on the top bridge. What are you talking about?
So the doors for me were on the right-hand side, all right? Yeah, the doors anyway, that we had to open. And because we were at the top, we were closer to where the wind demons were spawning in our particular location, which meant that the Gaz and Phil had actually cleared theirs rather quickly and had opened the door to then discover the wind demons. We hadn't opened our door yet because we were still dealing with the Shrike Fiends. So they kind of ignored us and went down, then hit the scenario, and then were making their way down while we were trying to get into position to open the door and do a bit of a pincer. And I just want to quickly talk about these Shrike Fiends for a second. Their abilities were very different to what we've had in the past, where their raw damage, but they also have a range 5 pull, right? They do a range 5 pull 2, and they do 2 damage, unavoidable damage. And they do a lot of pushing and pulling. At this particular difficulty, they also had an attack 3, target 3. And they also had another one that was like 2 damage and retaliate 3 or something along those lines. What I'm saying is, when you put a lot of these things together, it's disgusting. And we cop so much. And do you know that summons are really, really bad against these things? Not necessarily bad against, but these things munch up summons if they don't have the Bone Shaper cards in play to negate damage. Because when they're copping a pull in and just flat out 2 damage, that can't be really blocked by normal means. It's pretty gross.
Yeah, I think these were interesting, and they definitely were very different, like you said. I don't think we really fully understood how disgusting they could be until we got to the next scenario, which we'll talk a little bit about. So that's a bit of a breadcrumb to follow. So, but you're right, they had essentially like a aggro range of about 5, pulling everyone in. And so because gross. The damage they were doing was to everyone within. So basically they were doing these things where everyone within 3 takes 2 damage. And that was, you know, kind of like, oh, okay, that's adding up a bit.
Yeah, if you had 2 of them, it's 4 damage. Like, just like that, right?
Yeah, the good thing with it, though, was that those didn't count as attacks. So we were finding there was a couple of turns we were getting away with no damage on the scenario, but we were just copying it. So
we did get to deal with the Shriek Fiends on our bridge, and we opened up to help you with the Wind Demons. Wind Demons. Wind Demons are flying units. They have a movement, I believe, of 3, but a lot of their cards had a +1 on them, so these things were moving at 4. And this was one of the things that tilted me at the start, because I was going much slower than they were, and they shot right past me, like they ate grass, and went straight to the other team down the bottom, and my little 2 movements was not catching up. So I kind of missed on a lot of big hits on these guys. They also have 2 shield, both their elite and normal variety. They have an AoE, and that was one of the first things they did, was they do a little AoE, but if there's wind up, they turn it into a massive AoE, right?
Yeah.
And one thing that they did do against us was also they have a 1 push that went all the way out, they hit someone, and they disarm.
Yeah, monsters that just have an innate disarm, or not innate because it wasn't on their card, but just have an ability that says disarm, are really nasty. And like, it's, you can usually get around it because a lot of them have like eat an element, then do a thing. So you can kind of sometimes manipulate that element. But this was just pure hit everyone and do some disarming. And it's just like, oh, okay, I guess I won't have a turn then. Thanks. Mm.
So we still had the 2 Shriek Fiends, which actually they kind of clumped up quite nicely because I think you and Phil went to town on them when they were still in that corridor.
Yeah, I managed to get a couple of uses out of some of my AoE cards, my melee AoE cards, which was quite good. So yeah, that room, while there was a little bit of shenanigans, it wasn't too tough. So yeah, but it definitely did a lot better than I did last time, where exhausted halfway through. So. Yeah.
Now, that corridor also had our treasure chest, which was at the very top for me, bottom for you, well away from everything else. It actually would take you to go out of your way to go collect it. So Calvin decided he was going to go do that. We dealt with the rest of the room and cleared all that up. We had 2 more rooms, and they had different numbers on them, so it was probably not going to be connected. We also had the floating room from the original setup that we were waiting to see where that one belonged to. And we, for some reason, decided that we were going to open 2 doors at the same time.
Nah, I don't think so. I think we opened one of them and jumped in there, and then maybe in the same turn or maybe a turn after, but yeah.
Either way, we went and opened 2 up around the same time, and each one had a Shriek Fiend and a brand new creature.
Actually, that's right, because I think we split up a little bit, didn't we? We had a couple of people at each door, so.
Yeah, you went one way with Calvin's summons.
Yeah.
Calvin went to the chest because it's great that he can still contribute with his summons, and Phil and I went the other way.
Yeah, he's still at home on the couch, just chilling while the other mercenaries and his summons are off hunting and gathering loot, and he's just, I'll just wait here, guys.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like you were saying, when we opened the door, we had to kind of go straight in, right? Commit straight in. We can't let them come out because whatever damage they do is going to be for the scenario.
Yeah.
And there was like 4 or 5 of these imps, snow imps, in each room, and another Shriek Fiend to worry about. So we have it's so cool because we actually got to experience 3 completely new monsters in this time. And actually, the Wind Demons, I feel, were in Gloomhaven.
Yeah.
I know they were shielding, but I don't remember too much of the pushing and pulling and disarming that they were doing. I don't know if they've been buffed or nerfed or anything like that. But we had snow imps. And snow imps were really interesting because they had innate brittle, as in they were always brittle. And they had really low health, but they were very swarmy because there were so many of them. And what worried me at the beginning was their very first card, as we opened the door, they pulled, was a 5 shield card with a heal on it. And it was kind of like, oh, okay. And for some reason, I mistook that as, we have low health, but we have 5 shield. Good luck with it. But no, it was just one of the cards. But it kind of made me go, Jesus, what do we do against these guys? Mm. And there's so many of them. And they followed it up with, they got a heal other card. And I believe the other one we saw was that they buff each other with strengthen and they muddle other people.
Yeah, I think 2 of the cards they drew were support-ish.
Like, yeah.
Which I think was, I mean, it ended up being okay because there was about 3 or 4 in each room. So if they had drawn even an attack 1 or 2, they would have just pummeled the room. So we were kind of lucky to be up in their face by the time they drew that.
Mm. And the Deathwalker, essentially in our room, I spent more time running after him and trying to heal him. Our Deathwalker has this uncanny ability to tank really well and take damage and lose. I mean, we were all wounded from the very start as well, so he needed to actually get that off somehow. Because we were wounded from the outpost phase from last time we talked about the episode, that we copped a wound from that event. And this is the one that we went into having it on us. So he was really low health running into it. He doesn't actually have a heal card. Deathwalkers, I don't know if anyone's playing
a
Deathwalker.
He does have a heal card. He does. He just refuses to take it.
That's what I'm joking about. Like, Deathwalkers out there, you obviously, none of you have a heal card because why would you bring it, right? You spend most of the time, yes, doing lots of damage, but not wanting to bring a heal.
Well, that's actually what ended up a hard decision I had in the first room was we moved... Me and Phil were together because we had the wound on us. I had a move heal card that I used at the start, so I got rid of mine. And then by about the, I think it would have been the third turn, he was starting to tick down because he was getting the one at a time. And he hadn't really been hit yet, or maybe he had, but I looked at it and went, oh, okay, well, I could heal him, but the bottom of my heal card was my shift, and I needed to shift because I was running out of range cards. So I had a really hard call. I'm like, well, I can just use my shift card shift, but then that's my heal card gone, and I'm not getting back to that at least for another 4 or 5 turns. So I actually ended up making the call to heal him and not shift and then do a short rest to get my cards back and then just kind of keep going. So I had a really early short rest to make sure that I could keep him up and then still make sure that I could shift into my melee form, jumping into the next room. So, yeah, it's in another little puzzle that I have with the Geminate, but it came up again with him not having any ability to heal. Like, even a healing amulet, heal 1 health, would have been fine because it would have stopped him taking that damage. But he's just like, bleeding out, guys, I need some help. I need some help. I'm going to do damage, and can I someone heal me? And I'm like...
If you play Overwatch, he is Genji, spamming need healing to Mercy.
Yeah, that's it.
That's essentially what he does, as he's doing all the damage and taking damage. So, yeah, so I spent a lot of time running after him and healing him, but he cleaned up our room. Yeah. I really didn't do that much. He just went in there and just blew everything up, and Gaz had to deal with the other one.
Yeah, well, I think the other room went pretty well. I think I exhausted on the last mob. I needed to draw, I think it was a 0. I think I had a 2-attack card, like 2-attack, 2-attack on the card, and I just needed to draw even, and I drew -1/-1 because these things were brittle. They were taking double damage. Like, an attack 2 is 4. I think they only had, like 4 life. So I just needed a 0, but no, I drew a -1/-1, so I ended up doing, like, 2 damage to it and left it. But luckily, Kelvin, again, to the rescue and his Bone Shaper, the cavalry arrived and I made short work of the last one.
Yes, he did. And that was a real good moment because we were looking at the loss condition right now, and that was if Gaz goes down and we don't deal with that last Shriek Fiend is really far away from Phil and I. We're all the way in the other room. It's going to take us forever to get up there. It was all up to Calvin's summons, and he got it done. That was fantastic. Just a note on those snow imps. The last one, I believe, also had a move ranged attack 1/2 poison brittle, which thank goodness they didn't pull that early, right?
Yeah.
That was the disgusting card that luckily only one of them left when they pulled it, because I took note of that and I was going, oh, that's where they get gross. Was that?
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing, I guess, about how the monster deck works, right? Is the different synergies, different things can happen. Because if you have 2 or 3 of those in a room with a bunch of other monsters and they draw their strength and everybody heal everybody card, I mean, you know, that can be really bad when you're up against some heavy hitters. So, yeah, I guess in that instance, we are lucky they didn't draw that everyone attack, brittle, poison, everything.
No, that would have been kind of a sad time because this scenario was very big. It was very, I guess, to me, it looked really big.
It wasn't that big. You were just really slow.
It looked so big. I lost my 4 move card really early after a short rest. And I really struggled to then can keep up with the movement of where everything was. It was mostly a move 2 game for me. And it was just move 2, and if I could fit a heal in there somewhere, because I just couldn't hit anything. I was not close enough to anything to hit them before everything else was dying. And that was, that was kind of a bit of a crap scenario for Old Drifter. But it's a hindsight thing, and I if I'd played again, I'd play very differently.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to say much because Daddy had a rough time during it, but he definitely fulfilled the not doing much. And it wasn't for lack of trying, though. Like, I could see what he was trying to do every time, but it would just happen to be one of those cases where for 4 or 5 turns in a row, the initiatives wouldn't line up and things would get out of range of him, or, you know, he'd go late and then they'd go really late, so they didn't move up. Mm. And, you know, it's just one of those things that you kind of hedge your bets on the monsters drawing what you expect them to draw so that you can kind of get around them. But yeah, like those wind demons that were right outside your door and then they just like turbo mode off out of your reach. And you're like, oh, I guess I move 2 and stand next to them.
Right, I timed it so that it would be a move 2 and I get to cleave. It was perfect. And I went at initiative like 24 or something and they went at initiative minus 12 and just left. And I was like, cool, I guess I'll move 2 and stand or where they used to be. Mm. As they're charging off, it was just, it's just a couple of unfortunate things. I'd line up an attack. I remember another time I was lining up a really nice attack. The boys went before me. They killed them both, and I was like, cool, I guess I'll just put my attack away. It's just it was just one thing after another. But it's now that I look back at it, at the time I wasn't having the best time, but I look back at it and it's fairly amusing.
Yeah,
I can say effectively it was pretty much a 3-person scenario. I didn't really do much, like, at all.
I think one of the things that comes to mind with thinking about how that played out and you being just short with a couple of movement is I think we're really feeling the lack of movement boots and, for the same token, stand potions, which we've talked about in the past, which we're not even sure if they exist, and we haven't really seen movement boots come up either. So with those little things, you can just slightly fix problems. You know, I'm one space away in order to be able to do the thing I want to. It's all right, I've got my boots. I can have them once every long rest. It's just it's obviously one use per long rest, but you can kind of do it. Same with the stand potion, right? It's like in that case where I wanted to heal and then I wanted to shift. If I had a stand potion to get one card back, I would have just done that. I would have healed Phil, play my other card, and then stand potion back my shift, and then next turn just shifted. Mm. So it's really interesting, those things, that even though it's just one, like 1-2 movement, 1 or 2 cards, it can really just make a massive difference to how your flow goes. So I'm actually really enjoying playing without them because it's so much more, your decisions matter more, right? You don't just have this get out of jail free card where you're like, oh, well, I'll just use this thing to fix the mistake that I probably made, or I didn't put enough time into my decision, and therefore, you know, that's it. I just fix it that way.
Definitely. And that's one of the things that I think is the fun thing about the Drifter, especially, is that you have a mini puzzle at the very start of, I wonder what persistent abilities I'm going to use today. Am I going to need to strap my shield on? Am I going to need to strap my ret on if it's, you know, super swarmy? Am I going to need to use ranged attacks? Am I going to, the obvious one's crushing weight, right? Or the healing one, or the shockwave one. They're the ones that the go-tos. But in this scenario, really, the movement speed one would have been amazing. It would have made such a difference. And, like, I strapped, I did crushing weight, shockwave, and I got shockwave in there, and also the healing one, which I was using to sort of keep myself up and all that. Based on DPS meters by the end, I barely took any damage because I wasn't in the fights, right? I wasn't in the fights to do damage, to take damage. Did the most healing, but not by much. And the movement one would have made all the difference in this particular one. And this is where I'm like, well, it's a hindsight thing. But it's got me more thinking about that moving forward, which will play into the next scenario that we actually did.
You actually stopped using that movement one, which I'm surprised, because I know early on you used it and you didn't have anywhere near as much as of your token manipulation all worked out. And it does seem like the Drifter is quite slow. You don't have a lot of move more than 2 cards, right? Which is, I guess, you know, average speed for every character is move 2 because you can always do it. You don't seem to be able to reposition all that well. So I'm surprised that you're not leaning into that one a little bit more and making sure that you've got it there to be able to, you know, get where you need to be going and kind of make more out of your good melee attacks.
They've got, yeah, we have a move 4. It was just the first card that I burnt, and I decided to not risk burning something else when that was a bit silly. I should have kept that, because that's been something that's been keeping me around. And there's another move 3-1. There might be 2 move 3-1s, but I know there's one distinct one, and I also lost that one fairly quickly as well. So that definitely crippled me in terms of movement. But, I mean, at the end of the day, we pulled it off. We pulled off a win. It was a little bit hairy towards the end when you dropped, and we're relying on old Skelly. But we got it.
We got it.
We got to accomplish some battle goals.
Yeah, so, what were our battle goals in that one? I've forgotten.
So, my battle goal was Miser, which I had last time, which was never leave a room with loot tokens. I selected this one because the first one had no obstacles. And luckily, there was no obstacles in the next one either, even though, I kid you not, when you opened that door and I saw wind demons and I saw they were flying, I've gone, oh my God, you're kidding me, because of how the flying mechanic ruined me with this exact battle goal last time. So there was no obstacles though, just I think, no, there was maybe a little bit of difficult terrain,
not
that was
in the
it.
Corridor. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just obstacles, just flying units, and it was fine. So I actually ended up completing this, which was fine. Up towards the end when we were in the bottom room and Phil was cleaning it out, there was loot tokens everywhere, and then we needed to get out to come and potentially help yours. I was kind of going to just stay there because I wasn't leaving that room. So, yeah, in a way, that could have really messed us up. But I was determined to get those 2 ticks, and damn well I did. You had Bully, so you had to kill an enemy with 2 or more conditions.
Yeah, those Shrike Fiends are immune to 3 conditions, poison, wound, and
muddle.
And I can poison, wound, and muddle things.
A whole team is poison, wound, and muddle, basically.
Yeah. Look, there was a point right at the end that I didn't realize until after the scenario, and just because it was the last couple of turns, it was kind of fresh in my mind, where I could have pulled it off with one of the frost imps because I had a chance to move up and put a wound on one, and I think they already had some negative effects.
Yeah, so, they got brittle.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right, brittle. Yeah, so I worked that out afterwards. But, I tried with the Shrike Fiends, but I remember I moved up and did a thing, and it was just like, I tried to click the app. So I was trying to click add wound, and I was like, why won't this let me add the wound? Why is, and I was like, oh, that's right, immune. So yeah, no, I didn't succeed there.
Yeah. Well, you can't wound one tiny little bird. I mean, it's not going to really be a thing, right? You can't wound all of them.
That's right. Yeah.
Phil had weakling, which was becoming exhausted before anyone else. which he was a bit upset with you when you exhausted.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's it. So
he was trying.
Yeah. And the thing was as well at the end, I had 3 cards left. And if I got hit, I was on very low HP. So coming into that last turn, if I had gone before, I mean, I didn't end up killing the Frost Imp, so it didn't matter. But I think there was a situation where if I'd gone earlier, before the monsters, I would have been able to go and do that, not get hit. And then it was a shift, so it would have shifted me over or something like that. I can't remember exactly how it was going to work, but I remember I was in a situation and I said to Phil, he's like, are you going to exhaust? I was like, no. I've got like this turn and next turn. As long as I don't get hit like hard, I'm fine. And then I think because I was poisoned because they did that poison thing, it was just all kinds of bad. Mm. So, yeah, I ended up exhausted. And I was like, oh, this will be fine. And then at the end, he's like, ah, I just needed you to survive like for 2 more turns. So,
yes. And Calvin, our Bone Shaper, had Ravager, which was play 2 lost cards in the same turn.
I love that one. That's my favorite.
Oh, yes. Well, actually, I wouldn't mind it either because my persistence count is lost, right?
Nah, they don't.
What are you shaking your head for?
Because they don't. They don't go into your lost pile.
They will once they expire.
That's not playing them.
It is playing them.
Yeah, but yeah, I think you have to play them into your lost pile, not just them out there. Yeah,
oh,
I'm pretty
then
sure.
I know that one. If you know, let us know.
Yeah, and it'd be good to get a clarification on that because I feel like the persistent cards don't go into your discard pile. So they're not lost cards until you actually lose them.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I'd double check that one.
I definitely don't want that one then. Not at all.
I've had that one before and I remember it was great. I did like a big burn jump that did a bunch of stuff and then a big AoE attack that did a bunch of stuff. Managed to get rid of my battle goal, 2 ticks in the first round, and got to use 2 of my cards and get a bunch of XP. I was like, this is perfect.
No.
So
I mean, great for you. Drifter would hate it. We have DPS meters. Now, I'm just going to quickly squeeze over these. They've been nicely calculated and sorted out by Phil.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen these, so I'd be interested to see where we landed on that one.
All right. Well, I believe the first column here, first row here is damage done. I think it's attack damage. I think it's A. So A is attack. So I finished up the scenario on 24, which is not good. But
that's not terrible.
It's pretty terrible, but despite how close, I mean, I hit 6 times. Yeah, 6 times. So the hits were actually pretty good. It was just I couldn't get close enough to anything to really hit anything. So, yeah, I finished up on 24. Bone Shaper Sir Calvin had 52, and 13 of it was mitigated for a total of 39, which is fairly good. Yeah, you had 58 minus 5. So 5 was mitigated out of your 58, which is actually pretty good. So you finished on 53 damage. And Phil's has a big asterisk next to it because he actually finished on 57.
Yeah. But there was one situation, and we will talk about this in more detail, about the amount of crits that are in Phil's deck.
Mm.
But he did a really big attack at the end of the game to pull, eat all his shadows, give him really heaps of XP. I think he gets like 6 XP out of it or something like that. And it does like an attack 7 or 8, right? Now, he was doing this on a Frostimp. Snow Imp, that has 3 HP and is brittle. So it was already hilarious. And then he drew his crit.
Yeah. And crit the brittle.
Yeah. So the way that brittle works and is worded is that you get the total amount of damage and then you double it.
Yeah. Your next source of damage is doubled.
Yep. Yep. So
yeah, it was.
I think, was it 28 damage he did?
28 damage in a round and a swing.
Yeah.
So yeah, his total damage, if we're including that one, which we are, ended up becoming 85.
Does that mean he did more damage in that one swing than you did for the entire...
When I literally said I did 24, a part of me was like, I did less than Phil. Hopefully... No, it's getting brought up now. Yes. Yes, in one swing to a Frosty. Damage taken. This is telling. Damage taken. Phil... Is that Phil? Yeah, it is Phil. He took 13 and mitigated 1 for 12. Okay. You did what you would normally do, which is you took 36 and you mitigated 22.
Oh yeah, yeah. I actually managed to get my mitigation, my shields on in the right order. So
You're becoming quite a good option to be hit, which is really cool. Calvin tanks mostly through his skellies, through his pets. So we count those as damage that we're not taking. 23 damage. Mitigating 19 for a total of 4, which is fairly big. And I took 11 and mitigated 1 for a total of 10. That just shows I really wasn't getting hit. I wasn't in any fights. And then finally, to round things up, healing the Deathwalker with 0 because then I can't heal. The Geminate on 6, the Bone Shaper on 6, and the Drifter on 10. And I pretty much guarantee most of that was on Phil.
Yeah. Yeah, I think both mine would have been on Phil too.
Anything that you want to talk about regarding Scenario 13?
No, I think I enjoyed it. After my complete schmozzle of a scenario the time before where I just fell over halfway through because I really just leaned into burning cards, which was a bad idea, I definitely feel like I have got a better balance between the buff cards I need to do and shifting backwards and forwards. So I think I found that rhythm a bit more. And I think it was a fun scenario. I did enjoy the monster types, and I did also enjoy the scenario effect. So the way that they kept driving us forward, I think there was a good way to take what was kind of without that would have just been a basic just move through, kill everything, and added a little bit of fun to it. So yeah. It was cool.
It's like a different way of doing a timer, which was like thematically, it was very cool. I think thematically the scenario was really, really good. I think the Shriek Fiends are really different and cool. I think I'm liking them more from a thematic point of view. I like the, it's very unusual to have this kind of entity that's made up of birds, essentially, which is kind of freaky. And Fortella did such a good job of bringing them to life. I really like that. The Wind Demons were, I mean, we've seen them in Gloomhaven. It was kind of cool to see them again, but because they really messed me up, I really hate them. They're probably my most hated creature in the game. And the Snow Imps, I actually want to see the Snow Imps more because they really didn't pose much of a thing, but I can see where they could become an issue. And yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing them again, maybe buffing up a room full of Shriek Fiends or something like that. That'd be, yeah. Mind you, I'd be exhausted already. I'd want to watch that. I'd want to watch the team battle that.
Yeah, I think the Shriek Fiends at this stage where we were in the day, I was like, that was an interesting monster. I'm fine with them. And then we had our next scenario, which completely changed my mind on them. And we will go into a bit more detail. So I think that's kind of where my feelings on those particular monsters went.
Yeah, so speaking of, we decided then to do another one. Now, I believe this one was the next step of the one we just did. So it was kind of like thematically we're following the birds into a forest.
Now, before you go into that, there was one other key thing that happened. I leveled up. But
yes.
Because I didn't level up. I was 4 XP off leveling up when everyone else did the scenario before and we went back to Frosthaven. So this was the end of scenario 13. I leveled up. Everyone else was 20, 25 XP off, so nowhere near it. And the question was raised, so do we go back? And I think, you know, this harps back to our conversation last week about us all working together and kind of being, making sure we all had a good time. I think most people would have been fine if I was like, I really, really want to go back. And I kind of made the executive decision based on that not to. Purely because when we go back, we have two little things to read out on the time passes thing, and that's scaring the crap out of me. So I was like, look, I think there's a few of us, the rest of you guys were within maybe grasp of maybe getting another level if you went really well.
It was a stretch.
But like, anyway, I was like, look, it's probably better if we just stay out. We're already here. We don't have to go back to Frosthaven. I don't want to tick extra boxes we don't need to, but it meant that I didn't get to level up, sad face.
Yeah, but that's something you get to look forward to. In fact, you know, maybe in the next scenario, if we can pump out, I think we needed something like 28, 26 or 28, which is, look, it's a stretch, then we could all level up again together. I mean, we'll be level 4 and you'd be level 3, but...
Yeah, that's it.
That's fine. So we decided to head towards the forest. Scenario 32... which was the continuation of the one that we just did. I think based on the flowchart, it was the end of one of the branches in this particular one called Raven's Roost.
Yeah.
Scenario 32.
When we had the storyline thrown out to us, me and Phil were talking about it. I was like, okay, so we can either go to the beach or we can go to the woods. And because we never get enough lumber, that sarcasm, we decided to go to the woods, but also because I think we need an item or a transport or we need to build something to get to the other one. So this was really our only option along this path, and this, I believe, should end this kind of...
I'm curious about other groups when they play this, because we've kind of gone down this path of let's not build any of the things we need to go to any of the scenarios that require an item. Let's just clear all the ones we can now. And then we can kind of work towards building whatever we need to build, you know, with whatever the resources we need to go to some of those kind of blocked off ones because they need a certain item.
It's because they all need hide and we only get like one hide every time we go back. And so we're like, oh, do we spend the hide on building this one thing that just unlocks more scenarios or do we use it for something useful? So, but I think we managed to get a bit of hide, plus we got the hide factory churning out. So I think we should be good when we get back. We can start building some stuff.
So, yeah, we went then to the forest to get more hide and lumber. And I actually can't remember what happened story-wise, but we were following the birds, right?
Yeah, we're following the birds and they kept telling us that we shouldn't be here. And we kept saying, yeah, we agree. We shouldn't be here. Like, we want to go back. And the game was like, it's too late to turn back. We're like, well, probably don't give us the option then.
Well, stop threatening us.
Yeah.
Essentially. So we set up scenario 32, And the very first tile is like a fairly medium tile. It's actually on the smaller side considering how big some of the other ones were. And it was starting with six frozen corpses. Just six of them and a door in this relatively tight room.
We've fought these before. These were the ones that immobilized us when we had to kill the altar, when we fell down the hole. So we were like, oh, this doesn't seem that bad. Like, there's six of them. They can hit hard. They can do brittle, but we should be fine with this one.
Yeah, and our goal, actually, it literally just said, kill the raven's nest. That's all it said. Don't kill everything. Kill the raven's nest. When the raven's nest dies, at the end of that round, we win.
Yep.
Which is really exciting. So we're like, oh, this wouldn't be too bad. And when I see a room like this, I get really excited because I'm like, oh, we get to go so much cleave and so much AoE, and this is going to be great. Yep. And then I read the scenario rules. Do you want to go through those scenario rules?
Yeah, it was something along the lines of, without going into the technical side of things, basically every turn that they didn't get hit, right, at the end of that turn, take damage, sorry. Yes, it was this. Yes, very important. Not get hit, take damage, because this came into play a fair bit. But any turn that they don't take damage, at the end of that turn, they turn into an elite Shrike Fiend on full health.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we were like, oh, okay, well, we'll just hit everything. That seems fine. Mm-hmm. So everyone's doing a bit of prep, right? Because this is our whole thing at the start of the thing. Oh, no, wait, I can't prep. I'll do a little bit of prep. So, again, we were thrown in this position. We're like, okay, well, we can't do a prep round. We did an okay job of hitting them, but one of the things that we didn't factor in when we started hitting them was they have shield one. Shield one meant that a lot of our attacks seem to be in the 2 damage range, which means all you need to do is draw -1 and suddenly you didn't do any damage. So we found that there were a couple that ended up transforming after that first turn because we were like, oh, well, I'll hit this one and I'll hit this one. Great. Oh, I draw -1, so I didn't do any damage. Oh, it's going to transform now. Okay, that's fine. We can deal with 2, right? But it got very out of control. And it was initially, when we were looking at it, seemed fine. But going to full health, and we just talked about in the last scenario, those Shrike Fiends, when they do their AoE damage, and this was a room that you couldn't hide in. You basically were always going to be within 5 of these. So it was going to pull you in and it was going to hit you.
Mm.
Those transforming bastards, they just got out of control. And I think after the second turn, it might have been, I think we had like 4 of them on the board.
Mm.
Because again, there was 2 more that we didn't manage to do damage to. And yeah, we were getting absolutely cleaned up.
Yeah, if they're 5 range, pull 2, everyone takes 2 damage. And they've got another card actually, everything within a certain amount of range take 2 damage. When there's multiple on the board, when they activated, it was like, cool, this one activates, it pulls. Okay, so you go there, you go there, you go there. Oh, Gaz, no, it was Phil. Phil gets pulled into the trap, which was hilarious because we saw the trap there and we realized that if they pull in a certain direction, it was kind of a fun little puzzle who was going to go through the trap, and it was Phil.
Yeah.
But yeah, everyone take damage. Okay, cool, now we activate this one. Everyone take damage there, and it was a slaughter.
Yep.
It was really gross, and we just realized, oh, we're going to be throwing cards left, right, and center here to mitigate all of this. We made the call, essentially.
Yeah,
To go again.
What basically caused us to make the call to just restart the scenario, just call it there, was that we'd all gotten pummeled by these 2. So there was 2 that pulled us around and did all this damage. I think me and Phil were both on 1. I reckon you were on about 6. And I think Calvin was also only on about 4. So there was 2 of us that any damage we were taking, we were going to burn a card. And then the other 2 were going to probably take 1 or 2 hits before they started burning. They transformed and we had, I believe it was 4 on the board at that stage then. And then they drew their attack 3, 2 damage card. So literally all of them, the 4 of them were all going to be hitting 3 of us. Oh, target 3.
Yeah.
So we looked at this and I said, okay, we're going to have to burn like 9 cards here just to not die. Like, there's no way we can do this. Like, it got just disgusting.
There shouldn't be Shriek Fiends. That was the puzzle.
Yes.
Make no Shriek Fiends. And like I said in the last scenario, that initial prep, you know, I want to get my crushing weight out. I want to get my my other cards out, I had to, okay, from the very get-go set up, I put the boots on, like the speed boots, lower persistent ability, and I played the top one with the target 3 range 2 model, and I targeted the first two. And one of them I got lucky and pulled a plus 1, and the other one I pulled a 0, which meant it was a 1 damage, it got blocked. So even though we're marking the targets and calling them at the start, okay, I'll deal with these ones, okay, you got these ones, etc., it didn't quite go to plan because of that shield, like Gaz was saying. And it, all of a sudden, we had transformed, you know, units here and there, and it, you know, it just spiraled. It was kind of messed up. And when we reset it, when you were trying to work out your first turn, you planned it all around your battle goal.
Oh God!
Whatever it was, and then just did the opposite.
Yeah, look, it just ended up, there was so much talking about this first turn that, so I had a battle goal, this is for the failed round, called Prepper, which I think we should probably just get a Sharpie and scribble out the word Prepper and just write Deddy, because I think it's the Deddy battle goal, where basically it's don't play an attack card, or don't take the attack action, I think it is, for your first three turns. Now, I misread that, and I thought, and it's two ticks. I was like, oh, yeah, cool, I'll take that one. I misread that for your first turn, and I was like, okay, here we go. And then we're thrown into this scenario where we all kind of collectively went, we can't really prep. So I was like, oh, that goes that out the window of just doing like a prep round to get my battle goal. I know I can do a move, make everyone have disadvantage when they attack me, and retaliate. Right, and so I'll just do that, and so I was locked in. Okay, and then it got to the point where Daddy's like, well, if I go in the middle here, then I'll be able to attack two of them with my range. And I was like, oh, okay, then, well, I'll go over the side and I'll move here, and I'm like, okay, now I can't get in range. Well, just going through so much, like, what ifs at the start, right? Like there's so much planning in this one turn, but by the end of it, I'd completely forgotten that the whole purpose of me doing the move retaliate was to get that battle goal, which, again, just be really clear, I wasn't going to achieve anyway because it needed three turns. This is what makes this so hilarious. And then in the end, I ended up moving and realizing that one of them had already been tagged. I had my retaliate. It's a burn card. So I was like, well, I'm only really going to do like two damage to this thing. I may as well just do an attack. I may as well just punch it.
You also saw they pulled the move 0 attack as well, so they weren't even gonna move in and surround you to do it, right?
Yeah, that was part of the other thing. I was off to the side now rather than being in the middle, so it means I was only going to get like two of them, and I was like, look, it's probably not worth burning the card over this one. I can do it next round or something like that, so I'm just going to do a basic attack. And I attacked, and then as soon as I did it, I was like, why did I do that? I looked at my battle goal and I'm like, I literally planned my entire turn attacking. And because we spent 15 minutes discussing this first turn, I'd forgotten that. So it was just one of those cases. And then on that reveal of being so frustrated with that, I then read the card and realized it said first three turns. And I'm like, wow. So I stuffed it up and then didn't even read it properly in the first place. And
no, for that room, that was the worst card.
It was one of those cases where I'm glad we stuffed up that and started again, because if I'd gotten to the end of that and won and then been like, yes, I get two ticks, and then read it and it said three turns, I would have been so sad.
Mm-hmm.
So sad. So, but yes, anyway, that was the end of it. Basically, we called her after that turn. We said, you know what, we've got time now. If we reset, we can redo this mission, and we'll redo the room. We'll reevaluate. And I think you're spot on. The goal of that room is have no Shriek Fiends, right? Because we're spreading out damage as well. And this is what makes it so well designed, right? We're spreading our damage out across six creatures, right? Because we need to, which basically means we can't focus anything. So even if we don't get any Shriek Fiends, we've still got these six big Yeti things wailing on us, and they can actually hit reasonably hard. They've got like three or four attacks and stuff like that when they don't move. So it's such a cool scenario because it's right up in your face. You've got to hit everything. There's this pressure to make sure they don't appear. But then at the same time, you can't kill anything, because if we just focus into one, and especially when they, I think it happened maybe in the first round, or it might have been the second, we got one really low And it was on like 1 or 2 HP. And we're like, if someone doesn't hit this, it's going to transform and it's going to go back up to full. It's going to go back up to 12 HP and be this Shriek Fiend. So it was like this. Well, no, you can't just focus and dump damage into this one because we need to hit all of them.
Yeah. And I was discussing the prep round with Phil. Phil and I like to, well, we don't really discuss it because it's never a priority, but now it's a priority. So it's kind of like we literally were looking at each other and it's like, are you going to prep? And I'm not going to prep. And that's what we did in the first round, the fail round. And I just said to him, you prep, I'll use my model attack thing. It was after I used it that I realized, oh, the shield, and this is attacking for one. So we had to go back to the drawing board, and Phil had to make a sacrifice and not use his persistent card to create the shadows, right? We all had to make alterations to how we were going to play this from a team-based point of view. We needed to tag everything. And from the Drifter, I called it, and I just said, you know what, I'm going to go ranged. And I equipped the ranged ability, which gives me an extra range and an extra attack. And I equipped the target at target one. And I was going, I just announced it. I said, screw crushing weight and all that. I need to do this to help clear this first room. We all need to do that. And Phil did the same thing. He was actually he was doing more damage than he normally does in the first room because he didn't have a shadow. And I pointed that out. I was like, why do you want to go to this shadow pooping thing? You're doing so well right now, just doing other things. And right from the beginning, I used a card I've never used. It was just one of my lost cards, AoE ranged, and because of my ranged added plus one attack to all of it, you know, I did a little triangle and nailed two things. You did another big attack. We blew that room up. We used a lot of resources and we messed up our regular prep for it, but it felt good to kind of deal with that room quite efficiently at the end.
Yeah, something that I noticed towards the end of the first scenario we did, and then I kind of called this out once we'd lost, was we'd kind of gone into autopilot mode a little bit playing our own characters. We had lost a lot of coordination, and I think we really picked it back up with a refocus when we restarted that scenario, and we were kind of like, okay, not so much to like analyze the room and all break down our actions, but it became a lot more about what's the objective, how do I make sure I'm doing the best thing to help the objective and everyone else around me, rather than just like, oh, I just want to hit this thing really hard, or I want to do these two cards, so therefore I don't care what everyone else is doing. Mm-hmm. And that's what changed a little bit. So it was interesting. I think we just kind of been lulled into a false sense of like, we can just do whatever we want.
It was a full team effort, because even Calvin used, like, he sent a skeleton in and did some crazy AoE bomb with it, and then it disappeared, but it was enough to tag everything at the beginning. We all did it. And it was really cool to see everyone come together and try something a little bit different. So we cleared the room. All right, fantastic. We open the door. We are greeted with two giant tiles. So I set the tiles. And a new creature, brand new creature. They look a little bit like Gaz. There's three of them. Elite. They were Harrower Infestors.
Which are actually, they're in Gloomhaven.
I see, I don't remember.
Yeah, they're in Gloomhaven. They're not a common monster. They're usually in the special scenario, bossy type thing. There's a quest chain that they're in a little bit of.
Okay.
But so that's why I remember when they came out, I was like, oh, no. I can't remember what these guys do, but they do weird stuff.
Well, it's a giant room. The room is so big. And at the very end, there's the Raven's Roost, right? The Raven's Nest. It's a tree that takes up three tiles. It's a triangle tile, essentially. And there's a chest on the other side. But there's only three guys. And immediate from first impressions, like, my brain immediately went, oh, there's only three. Oh, but these three guys must be pretty scary. They must do something pretty freaky. And then we read the actual story of what actually is happening. And yeah, that's the thing we need to kill. And the thing's got like 48 health. And it's got range 10, retaliate 1, which was a very interesting...
Which we thought was not going to come into play very much. But when we explain what one of the people in our party decided to do, it actually became the pivotal moment for that character's rest of their entire scenario. So,
And every second round, it spawns an elite Shriek Fiend, which was kind of like that thing that was adding a timer to it. It was kind of like, we need to deal with this because our mission was literally just kill this tree. The Harrow was going to potentially cause a problem, and then the constant flow of every couple of rounds, those Shriek Fiends building up. And if we dedicate resources to killing these creatures, we're not going to potentially have the resources to deal with the spiky tree that keeps hitting us back.
Yeah, yeah. And remember as well that we had severe PTSD from the Shrike fiends that we fought in the previous one. So when it was like, yeah, oh, we got these three harrowers, and it's like, oh, and it's going to spawn a Shrike fiend every turn. Just like, oh, no, that sounds really bad.
Yeah.
I don't want lots of those, please.
God, no. So the harrowers immediately started coming for us, and they were doing their first attack was this long three tile in a straight line, and they heal off it and do lots of damage. But they were a bit away from us. They weren't actually in range to actually hit us. So we started making our way into that room. And it was at this point on, I don't know, I'd say three health. Old Leroy Jenkins, our Deathwalker.
Nah, four. He was on four. Yeah,
he was on four?
Yeah, on four. Yeah.
Just says, don't worry, it's my moment to shine. And because this is the perfect scenario for him, right? Any scenario that involves, hey, that thing has a lot of health, we need to kill it, it's his time to shine, right? So he started blinking towards the back, and he was going to deal with the tree before the Shrike Fiend started coming out while we were trying to work out how to even get in the room and get past the harrowers.
Yeah.
Because we had me and Gaz, we had the Bone Shaper and the minions.
And just to jump in there for just the scale of the room, by the time he jumped in there and got to the tree, he was probably about 10 tiles away from us. So It's not a small room where he just jumped forward and moved five and we were three or four tiles away. Like, he was really far, really far from us. And We also, in that first turn, the harrowers, or the second turn, I think it was, all the harrowers had moved up and basically boxed us in.
And peppered behind them was traps and obstacles and all sorts of stuff. So it was kind of like, ugh, how are we going to do this? And I believe you and I started beating ourselves into some of the harrowers, and there was one that we got them on one health, right?
Well, the thing with the harrowers as well is that, and I remember now a little bit about them from Gloomhaven, but because they've got innate retaliate 2, I think, yes, or retaliate 3, retaliate 2. So they hurt you, right, when you're hitting them. But they also do a decent amount of self-healing, and it's high numbers, which is what we found. So we jumped in, we kind of fought them for a round, and then I managed to deadly shot one, and then I grabbed that one, and I pulled it through two of the traps. I was like, look at this. How cool is this? I got to pull two. This is perfect. Mm. And it ended up on one HP because you drew a zero and I drew a zero. If either of us had drawn a plus one, it was dead, right? And we're like, that's okay. It's on one health. No problems. And then the next turn, he drew like a heal 5.
Mm.
It's like, we like, that's really unfortunate.
Yeah, it's rude.
So it kind of got to the point, and then I believe the turn after that, they healed again.
Yeah.
So by the end of it, that we were sitting there with 3 full health, and we're like, we've been fighting these things for like 4 turns.
And we barely moved.
Yeah.
Barely moved.
Help me.
Yeah, the pets are dealing with retaliation all over again, which is just great fun. And then you got this guy who's rushed all the way to the tree, who's doing respectable damage to it, but also is surprised when it hits him back, and then starts throwing out Shrike Fiends. And it was hilarious. There was one moment where he's trying to work out his movement based around the pull of how the Shrike Fiend works and dancing around this tree before deciding, do I hit the tree? Do I hit the Shrike Fiend? Do I pick up the chest? I'm on one health. How do I do this? Oh, that's okay. I'll just unload into the tree. And we're like, whoa. You're on one health right now, buddy. Like, every single time you do that, you're throwing a card. You're spending 2 cards to hit it, and then 1 card to discard for it hitting you, and then the Shrike Fiend's activating. Like, you're going to exhaust over there. The thing's still going to be on so much health. We're all the way back here. The summons are going to be over here because it's so hard to get the summons away from the harrowers that we've decided we're not going to be able to kill. And I'm moving it too because, I burnt my four card again, which is hilarious. Because I was super slow. Funny, in the first one that we failed, I strapped my boots on, my movement boots. And then when we failed it, I was like, why am I using my boots? This room is tiny. I don't think this is going to be a big scenario. So I didn't use my boots. I just went full ranged. So we basically started to work out. Once the harrow started healing, we knew what we had to do. We needed to get past them. I was muddling them, which was really handy. We had curses in the deck. Gaz started making his way halfway across the map. Calvin actually had managed to get one of his stronger units halfway across the map.
He's poor zombie guy.
Hilarious, because every time he made it go to the middle, it started heading back towards the harrowers at the door. You're getting so tilted because I'm Summon AI.
Yeah. So this is probably one of those situations when we talked about variant rules last week. People have these variant rules where you get to control the summons, and I can completely see how tilting it would have been, because we were looking at it. We're looking at it like Eternal to a head, going like, you can't do anything about it. He's just going to run back there, and then you're going to move him to the other way, and he's going to keep running back.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened.
What's interesting about that as well, though, is that there's an item that he wants to get, and he was going to build it last time, but we used the hide to build the hide hunting lodge thing, where it's an item that allows him to control the actions of one of his summons. It's I think it's like a usable item, so it doesn't come back. Yeah, once per thing. And it kind of seems like very niche. But this is the niche.
That was the moment.
This is the moment where it's like, I just need it to break past this line of monsters.
Push over the threshold,
so that then it will focus on the actual objective that you want. So, again, we should have heaps of hide, so I'm pretty sure he'll be able to get that, which will kind of cover that little gap.
I just distinctly remember this moment. You were nearly on your way there, and I started to make my way there, and in front of me was this minion, and it just turned around and started heading back the other way, and I was like, no, come on, this way, let's go. So we ended up, Gaz and I ended up making it to the tree. I think Phil, in his last ditch effort,
there was a really important moment. I'm not sure if you're gonna talk about it,
between the chest and the tree.
Oh, well, yes. Okay. You can tell.
So Phil had three cards left. He could take a hit to discard, and he was thinking, you know, I could play the two cards and do a long rest. I have enough movement to basically go hit the tree or go and loot the chest. The chest is behind the tree. And we kind of needed him to hit the tree. We needed as much damage into that tree as possible, because we're not too sure whether or not we were going to have the damage to make it. And he made the right call. He ended up hitting the tree.
Yeah. But there was a moment before that, the turn before, and this was a lot of fun, is that Phil is really, really good at drawing green cards, which are positive modifiers, which we make comments of constantly, and crits. He just never seems to draw his miss. It's just really lucky like that. Mm. Pure Amdurt, but in the, the upper echelon, the good side of Amdurt, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There was a point where he'd actually done quite well. He jumped in, he spewed his shadows out, and then he did three attacks on this tree, which we then realized he was going to take retaliate one for each of those. That's what dropped him from four down to one. And it's put him in that awkward position of like, well, every time I hit this, I'm going to burn a card. So he actually started just pumping damage into these Shrike Fiends, which was, in the end, really good, because it meant by the time we got there, there was only one. I think there was none, actually. And then we got one. So it just meant they were a non-factor, because we didn't have them spewing out damage at us. But just before, the turn before he went for the chest, before he had his final, like, I have one turn left, what do I do? He had a card, I think it was like an attack five. Right. And it was a case of like, well, I've got this attack five. I could do this on the Shriek Fiend. And we're like, but what's the point? Like, you're just going to do five damage to it. That doesn't help us. Like, throw that into the tree, right? Like, if you're going to die, just do that. He's like, but if I crit, then I'll kill it. We're like, yeah, but like, you can't. We know you crit a lot, right? But like, this is ridiculous. You can't just lay into, if you crit, then you'll kill it. And he's like, yeah. Anyway, I'm doing it. So what does he do? He flips over his card, and it's a crit. That purple goodness, right? That crit. And he's just over the moon. He's called his shot. He's basically said, I'm going to crit this thing and kill it. It's going to clean it up, and we're going to be in business, right? And then just at the end of his turn, realized that he was muddled.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And for those that have been with us on this journey, he got muddled. Because of me. So he got muddled because the turn earlier, I muddled him. And it was you could just see he went
I announced it, right? Because I was like, oh, weren't you muddled? I'm the bad guy. Like, you're the bad guy who did it to him. I'm the one that reminded him of it after he's been celebrating.
Yeah, and that's the worst part for him was that he, A, didn't realize he was muddled, so he wanted to have this crack at, I can kill it if I crit. B, he then pulled the crit. One shot, he pulled the crit. And then the letdown of going like, you're muddled. So you don't have a second crit in there. You can't kill this thing now, right? Mm. I think you're minus one or something. I mean, at least if he'd known he was muddled before the attack, he probably doesn't make it. And you know you don't have a chance of doing it because with disadvantage, you're not going to crit. But yeah, it was a very, we see the highs and then we see the lows.
Yeah, and then we got to do both in the same move. But, I mean, when he says he's going to call a crit, I mean, he knows his deck. We all know his deck really well. It's like, he's got a few plus ones on a crit.
Pretty much.
So, yeah, Phil died. Exhausted. Phil died. Yep, there. And then it was Daddy and Gaz and the tree. And back at the entrance, there was Calvin and a couple of minions. And he went full Hodor on those Harrowers, keeping their attention. And holy crap. The amount of times he was just like, cool, how I take how much? 6 damage, cool. Nope, that's fine. Nope, all right, we're good. And I'm like, how the hell? It was round after round. He was just absorbing everything.
Mm.
It was like a full Game of Thrones Hodor moment.
I reckon 3 turns and he barely took any damage. Like, he just was just like, nah, that's fine. And I think he had a skeleton that he brought out that tanked a couple times and died. It was just... and he actually put that one up that we haven't seen before, which was the every time anyone attacks him or his minions, they get poisoned. And if they're already poisoned, they take a damage.
Yeah.
And like that started ticking over. And it was
ticking them down.
Like, not only are you like, you've basically sucked them in so they're not following us because we got over that threshold.
Yeah.
You're also tanking and not dying. And I reckon you're going to kill them.
Yeah.
Like, we struggle to do this as like 2 of us trying to kill them. You're literally sitting there killing them by accident. So.
Oh, it was, yeah. Phenomenal. Phenomenal. So, yeah, we got to now. It was at this stage that I already had, I had my ranged attack, my plus one attack, 2 of my persistent cards, and I had a 3rd one. I had the healing one because I was going to go heal Phil, but that never eventuated because he was so far away and he was calling for it, but 2 movement, 2 movement, 2 movement, and he was dancing around a tree nearly dead. So I never got to actually heal him. I ended up throwing one of my last heals into Gaz. I actually then decided, hey, I wonder if I can actually, because I need to damage this, and the ranged attack cards aren't going to do me enough damage to actually hit this tree. And it doesn't matter because with range 10 retaliate, I'd love that ability. That'd be awesome. I'm going to need to lay in some damage. So I decided to then stack Crushing Weight. So I had 4 persistence up. And it was at that moment I was like, hey, I might be able to get my mastery out of this. If you play Drifter, you know the mastery is you need to finish the scenario with your token on your persistent ability on the last icon, on the last space of the 4 cards. I had already had the ranged ones. I was no longer ranged attacking. So the ranged ones were already on the last space. And I'd accumulated a fair bit of XP from this. The healing one was on the 2nd last space, which I knew I needed Gaz to get in position so I could throw a heal on him because he needed one, as he was now, you know, tanking the last Shriek Fiends from that was running around. And I was very healthy because all I was doing was moving and healing myself. And I had Crushing Weight up. So I knew that now when I get close enough to the tree, I'm going to start laying into it. And at this stage, I kind of realized, I think we had won this. I think we had comfortably won this. We just need to nuke this tree down. And we had the damage for it. The goal for me now became trying to get this mastery of mine. And Gaz had laid into the tree. And I made a comment at that time. I was like, wait, stop attacking it. And I wasn't clear on what I was referring to by that because Gaz looked at me like, no, what do you mean? Keep attacking. We're almost there. And I was very frazzled with all, you know, oh, yes, we're almost there. We've lost Phil. This is our win. Oh, but I can almost do this. And there was one short rest I was having. Where that was the round where I needed to spend 1 heal on Gaz to get my token over to the last spot and then nail my double attack on the tree, try not to hit it too hard so I could get my last attack, which was going to push it my last token to the last spot. And I gave my cards to Gaz to discard. Whenever we do a short rest, we fan our cards out to another player and they pull a random card out for the short rest. And I handed it to Gaz. I had 5 cards there, and I just said, please don't pull my heal. I only had 1 bottom heal because I was going to bottom heal, attack top. And he pulled my bottom heal, which meant that I wasn't getting the bottom heal over. So then I said to him, okay, I'm going to take a damage for this because I want you to pull another one. Please don't pull my double attack top. And he pulled my double attack top. And I've gone, there it is. That's it. I can't do this. The only way I can do this now is to do 3 super low damage hits. And either I kill it on that 3rd one or Gaz kills it a little bit later and we have to wait a few rounds. and it was super sad. So we lined it up. I did a normal attack. And the other thing was, I'm now, because of crushing weight, hitting it really hard. And then Calvin used his lost card in his last, because he was almost done. He exhausted. Before he did, he spent his last card to give me what he gave me a few scenarios ago, the attack 5, which activated crushing weight. I was attacking for 7, and I think this thing had 5 health or something like that. I was praying for my null. I have never said this before, and I'll never say it again. This is the only situation where this meant more to me than anything, and that was I was dying to miss. And of course I didn't. I really, really wanted the miss. It was just, it was such a long shot. It's like the reverse crit. But look, we messed the tree up and we won. And I was 1 token slide across from getting my mastery. And it was super sad. Like, it's a victory. It's definitely a victory. And it was really nice to pull that one off and win our second scenario of the day. But oh my God, I'm so sad.
Yeah, it was a bit disappointing that you didn't get it, because it does seem like such a hard mastery to get, you know, compared to some of the other ones that we've seen. And you just knowing that you don't have any control over those tokens, because they are always, right? Like, if you do the thing on there, it moves. So you're going to have to line those ones up and figure out, well, which ones can you pump, which ones can you shift around with your cards. And yeah, the fact that you got so close by accident and kind of realized it late, that you're like, hey, wait, this is a chance, you know, kind of was like, oh yes, like this is going to be cool, because I know this is really tricky. But yeah, bad luck.
No, it's fine. Like, there are some of the cards, like the tanking one, like, if you get hit, you can't really avoid that, right? You gotta slide him. It's more the range ones where I'm choosing to attack or choosing to move. I can see a scenario where I kind of just stop and I'm like, I'm good. I don't want to do anything. Don't touch me. Don't send any creature to me. Just go finish it. Go finish it. I'm here. And I can see a situation where that's probably the way I'm going to do it eventually.
Yeah, well, that's probably it, right? Like, the two ranged ones and the heal are the ones that you have the most control over.
Yeah, the movement one's a bit really hard as well.
Yeah, the movement one, I don't think so, because you, unless we know in advance what we're doing, it's going to be really tricky. Crushing weight, you can also control, because you can just not attack things. Yeah. But then again, you've got to be in a position. But yeah, that's probably it, right? Like, you've got to figure out which ones are you can get to the bottom without accidentally triggering to jump off.
So we ended up finishing that one. It was well fought. It was really, really exciting. We have some battle goals. The battle goals for this one, no, I've got it here.
I remember mine from this one. I had assistant, and the assistant is basically kill something that someone else has hit that round. So
First room?
No. I didn't get it till the very end.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. The one I thought I was going to get it on was the Harrower, because you hit it and then I pulled it through all the traps. Traps are doing 4 damage, right? So I'm like, this is 8 damage plus whatever I pull. I think it was on 10, maybe. Maybe it was on 11. And I was like, I've got this. You hit it. And then I was like, nah, that's fine. It'll die easy. And it didn't. And I was like, oh, no, this is annoying. And then meant we have to get it on a Shriek Fiend, and actually ended up being able to kill the one that Phil didn't crit because of his muddle. So he did a chunk of damage to that still, and then I was able to kill that, so I managed to get it.
I had Workhorse, which is 13 or more XP. The opposite card, which is the 7 and less XP, I keep getting in my choices, and I never want to pick it because then it messes up my persistent cards and all of that, because that's how drifters get most of their XP, or all of it basically is through their persistent cards. But the opposite for Workhorse was brilliant, so I ended up finishing the scenario on like 15 or 16, so that one was quite easy. I got to do that one. Phil had Slayer, so he had kill 2 or more enemies in the same round. Now, unlike the first time he accomplished this against the Oozes, where he made it very obvious, I did kill 2 people, guys, I killed 2 people, and we were like, yeah, good work. He didn't do that this time. So we had to ask him, yeah, did you actually complete this one? He's like, yeah, in the first room. I honestly couldn't remember, but I believe him. But that's the one, yeah, he got.
Yeah.
And lastly, Calvin, funnily enough, had Duelist. He can't leave a hex that was next to an enemy, which that's he right. was completely fine with, because he was in Hodor mode. So he just let us at the entrance. It was great because we all got our things, and that means after two scenarios, I got 3 ticks today. So that was playing catch up.
One of the things that we're doing with our battle goals now, which we talked about last week on the variants, was we've actually decided to implement one of the variants that I think someone had suggested online, and we're removing from the deck of battle goals any goals that have been accomplished. So, for example, we all got our last 4 on that one, so those 4 will go out. And so when we're shuffling the deck of battle goals each time to at the start of a scenario, we're handing out, but they're only ones that we haven't completed. And we're just hoping that this will allow us to see more, but also put us in a position where we might have to start choosing some that aren't as optimal, or we're going to be left with those ones. And then we'll kind of see how that goes.
Yeah, no, it's interesting after that episode that we ended up taking one. We were deciding between permanent death and battle goal Hanabi and the one that we ended up locking in. And it was actually a pretty cool one to go with. I don't think it's going to change the game enough, but it's made it very interesting. Because I've pulled Miser twice now, but now it's out of the pool.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
And I think I made the mention of this when we were kind of talking about it, that as soon as we get below 12 cards, it won't matter because we won't have enough. We'll have to reshuffle. So I feel like if there are some really terrible ones that we don't want at all, we're probably going to be pulled out of the situation where we're going to get stuck with those, because we will have that once we get less than 12, we'll just shuffle the deck again. So, yeah. And just for the record, there was no chance we're ever going to do permanent death or any of this battle goal Hanabi stuff that Daddy's talking about. He suggested both of those, and we suggested that we were going to leave. So we got through that.
If anyone out there does Hanabi battle goals, can you let me know where you are, and can I be part of your group? Because I think that is the king way to play that I have made up.
And for those that are unsure what battle goal Hanabi is, go listen to our last episode. All right, so where, again, I'm not sure because we didn't go through this at the end of the session, but where do we end up with our DPS for this one?
That's what I am trying to add up. But I'm now noticing, I'm now understanding Phil's columns. And because we didn't factor in the last couple of turns on the tree because he had left by then, I'm just going to add another 20 to myself. I think that sounds about right.
Yeah, because I didn't do anything.
So looking at, unfortunately, because of the session went a little bit over time, Phil actually left before he could complete the damage meters. And I've got the notes here right now, but I can't quite understand them. He tallied his up because he left, and we had played out another round or two or three after he exhausted and hair was gone. So I'm not too sure where we're sitting, but based on the looks of it, it actually does look like you and him both, I think, unmitigated damage was sitting around 57 and 59. And I was hovering around 55, and then Calvin's sitting around, I think, about 40.
So it sounds pretty even.
It's fairly even, actually. It was fairly even. Damage received and negated, it was 100% Calvin. Yeah. And you, obviously, is still doing a lot of that. And then me a bit at the start as well. And actually, Phil, yeah. So all together, this, I think, I will summarize that scenario because I actually really enjoyed that scenario. The ultimate challenges from the beginning room, and just the overall spread of everyone's kind of onus on their own responsibilities to do their job to make it happen. And I think, you know, there was a slight maybe enthusiasm from Phil, a little bit too enthusiastic, where he maybe should have been topped up before he charged in. But other than that, he still went in there and did, you know, it went really, really, really well. And it could have been terrible. I mean, technically, it was our second go. So the first one was already terrible. But once we understand what's required of us, it was so good we were able to adapt.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And I think that if we had talked through Phil what he was going to do so he didn't just Leroy Jenkins in there and neck himself, I think him throwing some damage out at those harrowers and staying there with us, we would have cleared them up pretty quickly. Because, I mean, you know, again, one of them was on 1. We probably could have got the others pretty low. and then maybe it's we all move up together. But by that stage, we might have had two or three Shriek Fiends, and you know, they could, their ability to pump out damage just really quickly is just terrifying. So it is interesting how it went, and yeah, I think he definitely needs to have some form of healing, like even if it's just a potion, right?
Because he does have the ability to run off. Like if I have the boots, I can probably match him and chase after him, etc. It just means a little bit that I've got to alter me for him, but the boots will also help me as well. So, you know, it's completely fine. What I'm learning from this is that we are now 7 or 8 now. How many have we done? Like 7 or 8, something like that?
Yeah, about that, yeah.
Every single scenario is still throwing us interesting curveballs. And I don't think it's getting too, oh my God, now they're throwing this mechanic at us and this and that. It's really kept us on our toes. I applaud the design so far, even if it's still a kill all, you know, make sure everything's dead. Oh, by the way, every time you're not within range of something, you're going to lose, you know, scenario health. Like, it's just, it's very, very cool. And it's actually making us adapt to the scenario. And I like that. I applaud that. Every level is not feeling the same, and we're doing the same things every single time. As safe as that would be, it's not happening.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely, I'd have to agree with that, that each mission has felt very different. Each scenario has felt very, very different. And I think we've only really had one that was just a attack move, clear everything, which was their first crab mission. So it will be interesting to see, because, you know, we can kind of see the sheets and there's heaps of scenarios. I mean, can they keep this up, right? Yeah. Like, can you keep up a really interesting different way of doing your intro room and objective at the end on 100, 150 scenarios, however many there are? Well, I guess we'll have to find out.
Oh, definitely. So thank you so much for joining us on this extra long double scenario episode of A Master's Degree in Rolling Terribly. I've been Deddy, and that's Gaz.
And remember, when it comes to rolling terribly, it's all in the wrist.